You're listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographer Series 2024. Artistic Direction, Brianna O'Mara and Chris Haring. The series is co-funded by the European Union in the frame of Lifelong Burning, Futures Lost and Found. Today's guests are Jay Bowie and Tyron Bevins, both working dancers and choreographers based in New York. With author Sean Pfeiffer, they discuss the history of working and the world premiere of their duet, A Message, at Impulstanz. They also talk about finding inspiration in the 1970s and dance as a vehicle for liberation.
Jay, Tyrone, thank you very much for talking to me. Thank you to Volkstheater as well for letting us record here. And perhaps introduce yourselves, just for like the listeners to know who's talking when the both of you are talking.
Hi, my name is Jay Bowie. I use they, them pronouns. I am one of the choreographers and artistic director of Jay Bowie Dance Projects.
Hi, my name is Tyrone Bevins from New York. I use he, him pronouns, and I am the sound director and also choreographer within the Saturn Project.
Yeah, before we talk about A Message, I want to ask about your residency time. What was your impression of the festival and of Vienna in general? And I know you made like I saw you, Jay, compete in the like big dance contest at Arsenal, and you also gave a public moves class, I think, together.
Yeah, so we were technically like having the residency after the performance, and we have been creating performances and premiering different iterations of our Saturn Project work in New York. And so the residency is kind of like our rest time to really reflect on the next direction we want to go in and what we are inspired by over these past 4 months. Yeah, from like May to August. And yeah, whacking right now, especially in the world, is really housed in the battle scene. So a lot of us go to battle and go to different club events that are surrounding the battle to exchange with one another. So being able to be at the dance contest was an extension of that. And it's also like part of the research as well. And we have varied backgrounds in dance. So whacking gets to be a wonderful umbrella in which we get to explore all of the things, because whacking doesn't have a specific movement shape or a set of pathways that we have to abide by in order to do it. It's more about the intention behind the movement and how we work with performance elements in the movement. So the contest being like a varied range of sounds and music and dance styles was a great space for us to explore all the different ways that, I mean, Tyrone wasn't there, but it was a great way for us to explore all the different ways that we can connect with movement and sound.
And our time in Vienna has been, how could I put it, very welcoming. Also getting to experience the local whacking scene in Vienna has been very special. Being able to share our style of teaching in the public moves class and seeing the joy on everyone's faces as we get to dance and commune together, that was a very special moment. And also just being surrounded by so many dancers of so many different backgrounds, but we all have this common interest of finding the joy within the movement, has been a wonderful experience overall as well.
Whacking starting to become very like popular in Europe as well, but it hasn't yet had like the global explosion that like something like voguing had, for example. So perhaps talk a bit of like the origin of that dance style and how you came upon it and what it means to you and your work and why you chose it as like a primary tool of expression, maybe.
So whacking originated in the 1970s in LA in the disco clubs. During the time, individuals of the LGBTQ community weren't allowed to live lives as freely as they would like. So the club was their space for freedom, for liberation, to express themselves how they would like to. So when I think about whacking, I think about being my authentic self in harmony with the music. So the goal is to bring out all the beats, all the movements, all the sounds of the music, but also to bring out your personality, your proclivities, your joy. And a lot of the original whackers and punkers, they found inspiration from the silver screen, from Hollywood, from Looney Tunes, from Kung Fu movies. And they put that all in the dance. So the dance, yes, we know it for its very intricate arm movements, but it's also connected to social dance and groove. It's also connected to character play and dramatization, and weaving all those together to express your own personal language within the dance. I came upon the style around 2012. I trained under Princess Lockeroo, who is a choreographer and dancer in New York, and she introduced me to Tyrone Propter, who was a Soul Train dancer and a whacking pioneer. And under their guidance and advice, I took on the dance. And because it was a queer Black dance that was also connected to expressing yourself and really opening yourself up to show yourself to the world, it really stuck to me, and I took it to the heart, and it helped me really open up in many, many ways. So I fell in love with it, and I just kept going and going.
Yeah, and I started whacking in January 2021. The summer before, August 2020, I was riding my bike, and I was hit by a car, and my upper back was really tight because the car accident involved like a major twist of my spine. So my arm movements were very stiff and limited. And when I knew that, or I realized that, I was like, oh, if I dance more with my upper body and my arms, then I'll be able to, you know, bring some more varied movement to it. And then I texted Tyrone because I saw him do a dance years before that was really emphasizing the arm. So I texted him. I was like, hey, what's that arm dance that you used to do? And from that moment, he came over and gave me like a 4-hour lesson in my basement about whacking and gave me all the history that he just mentioned, plus much, much more. And the things that really caught me, and I think, like, honestly, I felt like I dedicated my life to the style from that interaction, which was the fact that it was Black, gay, and from Los Angeles, like three different identifiers for myself in dance that I hadn't experienced before. Like, I haven't been able to really identify with the dance style so much before. It had always been ballet and modern, which I would see Black folks, I would see gay folks do it, but its origins were not of a place that I was from or from the people that I was from. And similar to African dance and the like West African, North African, South African, all the different diasporic dance styles of Africa are what they are and specific to those places, but I'm from Los Angeles. Like, you know, my people are from the United States, and their experiences in the transatlantic slave trade are from those experiences in those locales. So to be able to connect to the music that my parents listened to, my grandparents listened to, like all the cookouts were from and dance to that was really exciting. The other thing was that I was a musician before I started dancing, and as much as I am a dancer, I didn't really identify so much with like the dance community because I felt as though my music brain was louder than my dance brain. You know how sometimes we count things and the rhythm would be in a 7, but people will count it like an 8, and that would irk me because I'm like, no, you don't say 5, 6, 7, 8. You would just say 4, 6, 7 and then go. So my music brain was really loud, and it was finally satiated with whacking because you have to study music in a very intricate way and more like a musician than a dancer. And Archie Burnett, one of our teachers, will often say in the class, like, you are a musician in this style more than you are a dancer. And the third thing that I was really grateful to hear was that my body didn't have to look like any of the bodies that were doing the dance styles when I was learning about it. I can watch any video from any dancer who was a whacker, and at no point did my arms have to look like theirs or my movement had to look like theirs. And when I heard that, I felt very excited to share this style with the rest of my community who are often experiencing some level of disability in which when they see ballet or modern or other Western forms, they don't find themselves invited to the style because you actually have to have, to a certain degree, two arms and two legs, you know, 10 fingers and toes to be able to do the style. But a lot of my friends don't have those limbs. Like, a lot of my friends experience different forms of disability in which they are immediately barred from the style. But with whacking and punking, all you need to have is a body. It doesn't matter what kind of body you have or in what state it's in, you get to do the dance style. So with that, I was like, okay, this is fully in alignment with all of my values, all of the things I really enjoy. Let me go do the thing. And the thing actually beyond doing the dance style, it was actually finding my way into a phrase that Tyrone Bevins shared with me that came from Tyra Proctor, which was, you can't do this dance unless you love yourself. And that was a hard experience for me to like find authentic love for myself. So with that quote, I had a mission to go on to, and that has been my driving force ever since.
Let's talk about your piece a bit, a message, because what's really apparent in the piece is that like everything from the costumes to much of the music, as you said, to the dancing, even to the like intergalactic aesthetic and narrative recalls the 70s. I was wondering, what is it about that time that fascinates you, and what potential do you see in like bringing some of its ideas back, not only like in terms of art and aesthetic, fashion and music, but also regarding like the political energies?
I would say that really briefly, and I'll let Tyrone speak more on this, but the 70s were a very charged time. They followed the civil rights movement of the 60s. But a lot of the things that we talk about, the 70s often are of discos and joy and some kind of like partying kind of vibe. And I think the idea that we can't have joy, or we have to suspend some kind of joy and happiness because there is unrest or there's a genocide happening somewhere in the world, or multiple genocides happening in the world, is something that I don't really agree with, because it's completely opposite from the experience of being Black. Like being in America and being Black and being subjugated to the horrors of enslavement didn't keep us from actually experiencing joy. It was the complete opposite. It was more so that because we were experiencing such challenging times, we had more of a reason to laugh with one another and to find joy and cultivate it. So looking at the 70s became a very important social political tool to reflect back to the world that, yes, all of this shit is happening and we can still dance. And just to go even further, it's not that it's opposite of it. It's more that we need that to navigate through the times. Like looking at what's happening in Palestine and watching like Camp Breakers and so many other dancers that live in Palestine and in the West Bank, they still find joy with the youth and with the children, if anything, and helps them continue to live. So with that, I was like, oh yeah, the 70s hold the answers. Let's just look back 50 years and see what we can do with it.
And in that, I think, looking at the 70s, we're honoring the historical context in which the dance comes from and honoring the process in which you partake when doing this dance, because it was created by individuals who were taking all the oppression, all the struggles, all the hardships around them and transmuting that into joy when they were dancing. So within during the practice itself, you have to in some way honor that process. Just like Jay mentions, there are so many things out there in the world that are oppressing us, that are challenging us, that are heartbreaking to see. And in that, when we do this dance, we are still transmuting and taking all those things so that we can find our freedom of expression, our joy, our empowerment. And in that, we're honoring the lineage where this dance comes from. And I think there's also something very special about the music of that time. Whacking was created to disco music. One, because it was live instrumentation. It was so layered. It was dramatic. It was emotional. And in that, you get so much to play with, so much to express with. It's something special. There's a magic there. And I think if you don't understand, a quote from Tyrone Proctor that he would always say, if you don't understand the music, you don't understand the dance. And you have to look at disco when you're whacking to understand the spirit of it. So to honor that context, we look at the 70s, we look at the music, we look at how can we take our bodies and find joy amongst all of the hardship.
The piece started, I think, as a movement practice showing, at least that's like the recording I saw. How did that movement material developed into what you showed at Odeon in the end, because that was effectively like a world premiere in a way, both in narrative terms and perhaps regarding your collaboration with Tyrone, like how did that come together?
The original I guess I'd say the original like work in progress showing at Move and Research at Judson Church was called A Message from MX Black Copper. And it was like both a performance and like a character study in whacking. A lot of us have character names that could be a spinoff of our own names, or it could be something completely like different, like Princess Lockaroo's birth name is not Lockaroo or Princess. But in creating this character from the first day I started whacking, I was really inspired by an idea of a person who experienced all the traumatic events that I experienced, but in a more intense way. And like the 70s and like what they imagined during that time, I was thinking intergalactically and through different versions of time and different dimensions. So the piece was first an imagined projection, or maybe even like an imagined manifestation of a person coming from the future who, with their gifts, was able to come to our time and experience the air and the atmosphere of what was March 2023. And part of the piece started out with such joy. It's like, hello world, like I'm here. It's good to see you all. And like, you know, they're whacking and they're showing the things. And then in the second act of this three-act character study, the realization that in the future for MX Black Copper, they're experiencing a almost difficult to imagine layer of liberation in which they're not oppressed by the things that we are oppressed by. If anything, their time is at the threshold of abolishing all systems of oppression, so they get to live in this like utopic time. So I asked of this character, what would the body have to say if it had spent multiple generations not experiencing oppression and then had to come back to a time where the oppression is so thick in the air? And the anger and the grief and the reflection of all of that was the second act. And then the third act was this like release and return. The piece that we used at the end is called Saturn by Stevie Wonder. And that was a very important pivotal song that helped me imagine what was possible for the future, in which some of the lyrics are, I'm going back to Saturn where the rings all glow. Rainbow, moonbeams, and orange snow on Saturn. We live to be 105, or on Saturn, just to live is our natural high. Those are some of the things that if this person had to like leave one final message to the world that they just experienced, it's that they are fully aware that what we're experiencing now is, and this doesn't have to be good or bad, it just is. And then there is another way. Like, there's another way to live. So they go back to that time. So the piece, A Message, when Brianna O'Mara invited us to extend this and turn into an evening length, it was a wonderful invitation for my character, MX Black Copper, and Tyrone's character, Nyx, to talk about how they met and like what is the circumstances of the meeting and how do they actually get to know each other. So actually, after A Message from MX Black Copper, we invited Tyrone to create A Message from Nyx. And I would love for Tyrone to talk a little bit about that, because that ended up being the second to make the whole.
A Message from Nyx. Well, first I'll start talking about my character, Nyx, because many whackers have whacking personas. It's very much like our alter ego. For me, Nyx is inspired by the Greco-Roman mythology of Nyx, the goddess of night, who was an observer of time, existed before time, gave birth to destiny, hope, dream, all these wonderful things. And when I created my whacking persona, I wanted to think of someone who could weave fantasies, who was larger than life and time itself. So I think of my character as this multi-dimensional entity. And throughout the Saturn project, they posed a question of, if you are a living ancestor, because we are alive now, but we will be an ancestor to someone at some point, what would you say to those who will come after you? So I'm constantly thinking about that, especially in this time of how can we get closer to liberation. So I created a piece, A Message from Nyx, where I thought of myself as this time-traveling intergalactic entity who have seen many different versions of human existence, and to pose the question, what do we need in this time and space to find liberation? And throughout the piece, I put a focus on, one, knowing the body, feeling embodied, because through that, I think we learn how to connect to other bodies and how to care and consider and exist with each other. And also to connect with the idea of the Black femme, because I believe just throughout many social constructs, sadly because of the institutions and systems that have been built, that the Black feminine has been denied and its power, and to be seen as it should be, and people do not identify with it. But it's a part of all of us, and it's something that we need. It's something that needs to be uplifted in order for us to move forward. So I created a whole piece around that as a gift to those who are seeking liberation.
I want to talk about space a bit, meaning location, not galaxy. You already mentioned Judson Church, where you showed a message from MX Black Copper, which is, of course, like a legendary, almost magical space in dance history, having birthed postmodernism and so on. And in Vienna, you performed at Odeon Theater, which used to be the Grain Exchange building, actually, so something very different. But it shares with the Judson Church like a grandness. Both already seem to like deliver a setting for you in a way. So I want to ask about what it means to like inhabit a space as performers for you, and how it influences your dance in the moment, because Odeon wasn't like a venue where you could rehearse. You just like came to Vienna and then showed it there. So yeah.
Well, to speak on just showing up and doing the thing, whacking in itself is a practice of freestyle dance. So a lot of times as a whacker, when I enter a space, I just let the music be my choreographer and I move with intention. So the same thing when we came to Odeon, we have an intention, we had our music, we knew how we wanted to share our message and our bodies and our movement with the space, and created a structure, and we hit it.
Yeah. And honestly, that was very similar to Judson. The day of that performance, what was it, March 13th? Yeah, March 13th, 2023. I had one run through, like maybe an hour before the performance, and I had a suitcase full of costumes that I thought I might wear, and I decided on the one that I ended up wearing, like the fatigue pants and the mesh shirt. And I kind of just like whacked through the space, you know, like let the music play, and then just if that idea came in and it felt right, I would run with it. I had performances in the space before, but unfortunately, movement research at the Judson Church isn't one of those spaces that you get to like rehearse in. You know, you kind of, You respect the both the physical space, but also the time space of like run and gun. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of the few spaces where we show up to movement research at Judson Church nights to see what artists can do with like the bare minimum, so that you really get to focus on the craft itself. There aren't many like cues, if any. Yeah, like I said, you don't get to like super rehearse in the space. Some artists don't even rehearse in the space. Some artists kind of just like come in and kind of fill out the space, and then they go, okay, cool, well, I'm gonna do it tonight. There are no reviews of the show, so it's also protected in that way, so you get to just really be in your rawness of it. And that's what I really enjoy, honestly, as an artist. I think I respect and reflect a lot on this phrase I hear, where it's like two of the greatest killers of creativity is too much time and too much money. So I don't think that those are going to be true things all the time, but in this moment where we have like so little time to rehearse in a space, we just get to rely on the raw creative experience and see what that is. And I really love that. So Odeon felt similarly. We got to prepare a lot, though. We had blueprints of the space. And we have a really great team with Tyrone as a sound engineer, or not sound engineer, sorry, sound designer, and Carrie Koch as a lighting designer, who can, with their expertise, like see a space and then make things happen. And a great team at Odeon, both the Odeon Theater team and as well as Impostance team. But we just like got to play. I think that's what the immediacy involves. It requires you to just play and not take everything so seriously. And, you know, with three nights, like, be like, okay, let's try something different this night, or maybe I'll do this. And and I think that's exciting beyond, like, crafting something to such a, like, perfect specificity. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there seems to be like a lot of freedom in your movement, but there are also like things that are already set, including the spoken interludes that your piece is interspersed with. It reminded me a lot of like album interludes in a way. Mm-hmm. Some are like narrative, some are more like fable-like, others more like philosophical. So tell me perhaps about the people we hear, and then even maybe about the tool of the voiceover itself, because there is like a disembodiedness to it, and you never speak the texts yourself. I still have the feeling like there's like a strong dialogue between your dance and not only in the music, but the spoken words as well. Absolutely. So, yeah, tell me about that decision.
Yeah. The theme of my work since, when was the last time, or the first time I can say I did this? Yeah, since my first premiere in New York, quote-unquote, at Jessen Church, what was that, October 2016? Yeah. I was speaking and dancing live with a friend of ours, Wendell Gray, the second, and that, like, was a catalyst for an era of my work where I would speak and dance, of course, inspired by artists like Bill T. Jones, who would do the same. And having the privilege of dancing in the company when I did, I got to see all the different ways that words, both descriptive, fable-like, philosophical, can help invite the audience into another perspective of looking at the movement, which is like it allows the movement to be a fractal piece, like kind of suspended in space when words influence the mind. And coming to Austria and expecting that at the Impostance Festival that the relationship to the English language was going to be varied, as well as the relationship to how Black Americans speak is going to be varied, that it wasn't going to be the actual individual words and sentence structures themselves that were going to be communicative, as much as it would be how the voice is used as a tool. You know, it's like, when people listen to classical music, whether they have a musical background or not, they feel the notes, they feel the progressions, they feel the melodies. And that's what ended up being like the musical tool for us to craft the sound structure for the evening. And I think you're pretty spot on with the idea that these are like interludes in an album. We think about the sound of each of our works as somewhat of like an album or a playlist or like a mix. So when you can just listen to that by itself, even without the dancing, you get as much of what the work is meant to communicate as you would if there was the movement. So the folks that you hear in there are ourselves. You hear us in there. You also hear some of the other folks who are a part of the Saturn Project, like Jason P. Smith and Nubia Nene. You also hear Kumari Siraj, Brian Polite, and Kim Holmes, and Coco Motion, all of these different whacking elders and community members of ours who were asked a similar question as we answered, which was, what would you say to a young whacker in the future who decided to self-immolate in performance and was preparing to be resurrected? What would be some of the encouraging words that you would share? And that was due in part to like keep the storyline pretty clear, but also to invite our community into the work and like travel with us in this work. If we could, we would bring everybody with us. Like that space would be full of whackers and we would turn that place out. But with the resources that we had, it was just only two of us on stage embodied, but we can bring like an infinite amount of people in voice with this. So it's a part of a community binding element as well. Mm-hmm. Any other things? Yeah.
In part by bringing in the voices of elders from our whacking community, it also acts as a way of archiving which I think is very important, especially in styles like whacking in the club and street styles, because a lot of our traditions and our histories are passed down orally, and sometimes things are lost that way. So in terms of, as well as informing the piece, it's also a way of preserving the very nuanced, unique perspectives of those individuals who are very important to our community. I'll also add that we have voiceovers from, especially within my solo section, from Bell Hooks, from Pauline Alexis Gums, Sun Ra, and for me, in that section, it's me communicating with them as well as their voices communicating with the audience. And especially when it comes to the idea of expressing ideals around the Black feminine, myself as a cis male, I want to get out the way and let the actual individual who comes from an experience to share the message and to present it to you. And then we both have a conversation with it, and we both take it in, and we are challenged and, yeah, invited to just take a new perspective.
At one point, one of the voices talks about a kind of a utopia through performance, like a liberation through dance being performed in certain spaces, saying there may also be some room for white people to enter these spaces, but that the primary driving force should be Black and brown people and their art. What then does it mean to take this work, like you already said, which does speak from like not only a Black experience, but specifically like a Black American experience with all its historic and cultural baggage, to say the least, like literally across the world to Vienna and to Impulstanz? Because while the festival does, I think, like pride itself on like a fairly diverse, very international, at least, audience, at the end of the day, it's still Vienna. There's like still a lot of elderly white people at these shows, and Vienna has its own like imperial history. So what does it mean to take a work out of the community and the scene it emerged from in that way? Like, is there a different energy in the room, or how do you approach that?
Yeah, there's definitely a different energy in the room. And I think the important qualifier of the word different is just, like the root word is just not like the same or not like the other. The value of the difference, there really is no value of it. I think the outside of that like tangent that I'm on, because I think I'm a little, I get hesitant to speak about the Black experience with doing our cultural dance styles and our cultural practices in comparison with folks who don't identify with those practices, or they're cultural surrogates, as a phrase that I borrow from Latasha Barnes about folks who do a dance style of which they're not from that culture, but they hold the history in their body and they hold the techniques in their body so they can pass down. It's that it's almost illanguageable. And sometimes the experiences of the folks who are not of the of the cultural origin are compared to those who are outside of it. And trying to find language to recenter us back into our own dance styles is more effortful than not. And it's both effortful in the States as well. The history of whacking is that it almost died out like at least two times. And we say died out in quotations as well, because nothing ever really dies. It just transforms and has a different name or different manifestation of it. But in its original experience, the AIDS epidemic and pandemic really hit a huge toll on whacking and punking. And it did on the entire art scene in the world. Like we all are suffering in a grief of queer elders who hold information who are no longer with us, because so many different bureaucracies didn't want to protect them and didn't want to prevent something that was very preventable. Alongside of that, commercial industries and capitalism like really swallow up a thing so much that by the time folks like me, who are like the youngest generation coming into the style, get a hold of it, you see so few of the original culture inside of it that you may not be able to recognize, that you already hold on to so much of what the core elements are and what capitalism has swallowed and regurgitated back at you is like at most a tenth of what the thing is. So right now I'm like very sensitive to the experiences of being black and gay and from Los Angeles, doing a dance style that is all of those things, but yet I see so few people who reflect those experiences doing the style in the lights. So taking this piece around the world and taking it to Vienna as its first stop gives us an opportunity to be seen in that, so that when people are introduced to whacking and punking for what we assume sometimes might be the first time or the first time in a significant way, they see a reflection of what some of the originators looked like, not just in the embodied experience, but like in how we dance it. Because as we dance, I use this phrase for myself, but I don't know if Tyrone identifies as this, but as an ethnochoreologist, in which we actively learn the ways of moving our bodies so that when we continue to do the dance style, you see the literal movement lineage from its original point to where we're at now. And the goal is to keep that lineage pretty, pretty whole and without any gaps. And then when we have an opportunity to pass it on, we can pass on the wholeness to the next person, whether they are black, whether they are not black, whether they're queer or not. And I think that is a very important thing to talk about with whacking and punking, because the club was intentionally a conglomeration of all world's people. The thing is that when we really get down to the brass tacks of what oppression is and what liberation entails, it entails that we are all liberated because we're all oppressed by something. Even those who are privileged by a certain form of oppression, like, so we are male-bodied people, I don't identify as a man anymore, but we still receive male privilege. And at the same time, we are oppressed by the idea of patriarchy because we have been conditioned outside of our natural instincts for our emotions and nurturing and so on and so forth. So even though we experience the privileges of patriarchy, we're also oppressed by the same thing that we experience privileges of. So in that same way, when we look at all different forms of oppression and we name them, those who are privileged by it have an opportunity to be liberated from the things that they are quote unquote gifted with. And that in turn helps those on the other side of this like two-way mirror experience the liberation of being free from those who are knowingly and unknowingly oppressing them. So it's like the more that we connect with the Black feminine, as we've been naming, the more that we can have authentic relationships with Black femmes and knowingly create a liberating space for them instead of unknowingly oppressing them by just being. We understand that we have inherited an imagining of a way of being, and because folks have imagined such a way of being, we also have the same power of imagining a different way. So we're just going to commit to doing it, and while we have breath in our bodies to live it, we're just going to see how far we can take it.
That's a great place to end it, actually. Thank you so much for taking the time and for talking to me, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your stay and come back soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Attention Young Choreographers series podcast. To never miss a new episode, follow us on Spotify, Podcast Addict, or Deezer. For more artist conversations, visit our websites lifelongburning.eu and impulsedance.com.